podcast for commercial fruit and vegetable growers here in Nebraska. And today we have a special guest from outside of Nebraska, Dr. Christine Wang from South Dakota State University. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's fun to visit with folks from a neighboring state.
Excellent. To start with, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I have been at South Dakota State University since January of 2021. And in my role, I'm an assistant professor and SDSU Extension Consumer Horticulture Specialist. One thing that's unique about Extension in South Dakota is we are no longer a county-based system. So we have state faculty specialists and then state-level field specialists. So we have a pretty small team working on things related to horticulture when you consider the geographic size of South Dakota. But I'm excited to report that we've added some team members and we have seen a lot of growing interest in expanding specialty crop production and particularly cut flower production and doubling down on vegetable production as well. So in my role at SDSU, I am really interested in vegetable and cut flower production from an applied research standpoint. My current research program focuses on incorporating cover crops and reducing tillage for vegetable production. I have a few grants related to high tunnel outreach and education, and we're currently building two high tunnels on our own campus and working towards growing our research program in high tunnels as questions continue to come up about fine-tuning high tunnel production, especially amid our warmer summers. I have an integrated team of graduate and undergraduate students who support me, and we have Master Gardener volunteers who assist with research. And I've really enjoyed over the last few years getting to know technical service providers, partner organizations, and my favorite part really has been getting to know our specialty crop farmers across the state and working with many of them for on-farm field day collaborations, as well as integrating some of their wonderful ideas and leadership into my research program for on-farm trials.
Great. Well, I know you had some travel difficulties getting to the Great Plains Growers Conference, and we missed you there. And in one of my sessions, you were going to talk about the benefits and pitfalls of shading Midwest high tunnels, which a lot of folks were disappointed that you couldn't make it. And I promised them I would try to get you on the podcast to talk about that. So what are some of the benefits and pitfalls of shading Midwest high tunnels?
Well, first of all, I apologize that weather and illness caught me in a double whammy and I miss seeing everybody. Surprisingly, that was one of the few true storm events we had in South Dakota. And I haven't looked at the drought map recently, but I know here in South Dakota, we're starting to worry and you might be worried as well in Nebraska. I'd like to take us back a step and think about the big picture benefits and challenges of high tunnels first, as many of the listeners may have experienced some of these and can relate to them. As we know, in the Great Plains, especially, high tunnels are really helpful for lengthening that growing season and producing on what we call the shoulder seasons of earlier into the spring and later into the fall. Some folks are even trying to push that into winter production, which you all down there can probably do more than I can in South Dakota. We know that high tunnel production increases is yield of many of our crops. And some of the ways that happens is improved produce quality and reduced foliar disease, and also just faster time to ripening for a crop such as peppers grown in a high tunnel versus open field. And economic research has shown, because of kind of these interconnected benefits, that high tunnels really help improve specialty crop farm, the profit of specialty crop farms, and the economic stability, even lending themselves to things such as, you know, keeping employees on the farm longer because of the changes in seasonal production. But as we know, and many of us have probably experienced, there are definitely challenges with high tunnels. This is probably the place where I should say that I have seen what a derecho or a really high straight line wind event can do to high tunnels. I've seen what this looks like both in Iowa and South Dakota. Derechos seem to follow me where I move, unfortunately. And no matter how sturdy your structure is, it is hard to stand up to winds that are over 80 miles per hour. So that can certainly be a challenge for us in the Plains states. And I don't know that I have all the answers for that one. We know, of course, with high tunnels that we need to think about irrigation inputs, whether that's, you know, rain capture, digging a well, tying into rural water. Of course, we're controlling our own destiny with irrigation in that high tunnel, but having a good food safe water source is very important. Some research has shown the buildup of, you know, increased salts in high tunnel soils. Because we don't have that natural leaching with rainfall or snowfall, unless you're taking that cover up in between events. And we know that soil-borne disease can be a challenge when we're growing in that same soil year after year. And when we really want to grow those tomatoes or that lettuce crop or those cucumbers year over year over year. So thinking strategically about crop rotation between high tunnels or beds becomes really important. And knowing what cultivars to grow, some things that do really well in open field settings might not do as well in a high tunnel, especially because of heat, which brings me to what we were here to talk about today, which is managing heat in high tunnels. Excess heat is challenging for a variety of crops. And the rest of our time together, Carol, I'd love to talk about some of the things I learned at Iowa State and some other ideas that I've seen on a variety of farms.
Great. Well, I know specifically you were going to talk a little bit about shade cloth within high tunnel systems. So let's start there.
All right. Let's start there. And I want to just let folks know why should we be worried about heat in high tunnels? Like, why should I think about shade cloth or not think about it or some of these other methods? It's really important to remember that, especially with our fruiting crops, too hot can be an issue for pollination and fruit set. It can lead to bolting in crops like lettuce or brassicas. So those are some of the reasons we care about managing heat in high tunnels. Never mind the worker impacts. No one likes being in a hot high tunnel and being really, really grumpy. So some of the issues we can see are, you know, flowers that just drop and lack of pollination for our cucumbers, lettuce, and tomatoes. Cucumbers, peppers, and tomatoes. We can see bolting of our lettuce. And a lot of those things start to happen as high tunnel temperatures creep, 85 degrees and above. And another issue is if we have too much heat at night, which is something we can anticipate in a changing climate. So we want to be prepared for that. Now, shade cloth at night is not going to be useful, but we did explore the use of shade cloth for mitigating daytime temperatures. And this is all based on work that I did while I was at Iowa State University under the direction of Dr. Ajay Nair. And I know many of your listeners are probably familiar with Ajay and a lot of his work as well. And so Ajay was starting to receive grower questions about how do I deal with sun scald? How do I deal with poor fruit set? How do I deal with yellow shoulder in my tomatoes, which can be attributed in part to heat? So how do I start to mitigate all of these challenges and still have a successful vegetable crop? And so what Ajay and I looked at is we looked at trying to identify appropriate colored bell peppers for high tunnel production. And we looked at tunnels that were shaded with two different strengths of shade cloth, if you will, compared to unshaded high tunnels. And specifically, we looked at black woven shade cloth because this is one that's readily available. It's one of the cheaper types of shade cloth to purchase for farmers. You can get it cut to size or get it in a variety of sizes with grommets in it. So you can have roping and pull it over your tunnel. And the way we used our shade cloth was pulled directly over the tunnel so we could measure light reduction. Now, I want to note for folks that are thinking about shade cloth, you can expect a little bit of etching on your plastic from that shade cloth. That was something that we just noticed anecdotally, and I've heard reports from other farmers that that can happen as well. So we looked at single poly high tunnels, no shade cloth, one that was covered with a 30% light reducing shade cloth, and one that was covered with a 50% light reducing shade cloth. And these were smaller high tunnels, approximately 20 by 40. So they were smaller units and we were able to have replicated tunnels. So I was actually managing six high tunnels for this project so we could have two with each same treatment, and we grew peppers in all of them. So we got really good at picking peppers. And these shade cloths were put on, I want to say mid-June of each season, when daytime temperatures in the high tunnel were starting to creep 90 and above. And so we put those on in June. And what we did is we didn't, you know, remove, like put those shade cloths on and remove them every day. Someone had suggested that. That does not seem realistic. And I know you probably wouldn't want to do that on your farms. And we actually left those shade cloths on for the duration of the study. And in both years, we ended pepper harvest near the end of September, early October. If I was to do this project again, I think I would have removed those shade cloths in August when light levels were starting to reduce after, as our light levels in the north become less as we head into fall. And the results might have looked slightly different. So I want to add that as a caveat. The bell peppers we looked at a variety of colors because at the time we didn't have good high tunnel recommendations for colored peppers in high tunnels. So we looked at three yellow, Flavor Burst, Summer Sweet, and Sirius. We looked at one orange pepper, Delirio, two reds, Archimedes and Red Knight, and a purple pepper called Tequila. And what we noticed with tequila and where I think it gets its name is as you got later into the harvest or production season, you started to have less deep purple and more of a sunrise color. So I think that might have been where the cleverness of the name came from. And again, this research took place in 2017 and 2018. And we focused on metrics such as plant health, and of course, yield and crop production. And we had sensors in all of the high tunnels to track light levels, as well as air and soil temperature. Some of the things we found when it came to harvest is, you know, we were looking for nice, blocky, marketable bell peppers that were at least 80% or more colored. And tell you what, we had oodles of beautiful peppers. We also had peppers that had disease issues. We had peppers that had mouse damage. We had used a switchgrass mulch in these high tunnels and to help mitigate soil temperatures and moisture. And we had a lot of mice roaming around. We definitely saw sunscald, although not as much as we were expecting. So those were some of the things we were tracking with our yield data. And from a results perspective, our goal would be to keep temperatures below 89 degrees, because at that point, anything above that is when we're starting to damage that pepper crop in terms of pollination and fruit set. And from an average temperature standpoint within the high tunnels, looking at July and August specifically, our two hottest months each year, our average temps, we were staying below that. Our max temps reached within each of those months, even with shade cloth, we were still peaking above that 89 degrees Fahrenheit. And I don't know for how long of a period of time, but within those production months, just because I don't have the graph in front of me, but within those production months, we know even with a 30 or 50% shade cloth, we were getting above 89 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, it can be assumed that we were hitting those peaks for less of a time period than we would have been in our no-shade tunnels. Now, our average outdoor air temperatures, were lower than our no-shade tunnels. So we know that we were getting hotter compared to outdoor air temperatures. And the use of 30 and 50% shade cloth kept us more in line with what was going on outside of the high tunnel. So shade cloth works to cool tunnels. It works to cool the ambient environment, and it did have some cooling effects on the soil as well. But what we were especially interested in is the other side of this story, is how much were we actually reducing the light? Because it's important to remember with our plastic on our high tunnels, we're already reducing light levels when we have a piece of plastic that's intercepting that sunlight, even with the best piece of plastic possible. So what we found in terms of light levels is that a single layer of plastic was reducing light levels by about 16% each season. We had a little bit more light reduction in the second season, presumably from the etching of shade cloth, because we re-randomized where shade cloth had been placed. And then with a 30% light reducing shade cloth, we were looking at about a 48% light reduction with that shade cloth plus the tunnel. And then with the 50% shade cloth, we saw closer to a 64% light reduction overall. So we were cutting with that 50% shade cloth, we were drastically decreasing light levels. And that had some serious impacts on pepper crop yields. We did measure other things related to crop health and performance. And I think a takeaway just kind of visually looking at it is the plants that were in those 50% shade cloth treatments did end up being a little bit taller and bushier. But there was enough variation in our data that it was kind of hard to get to a lot of, you know, statistical differences. But one thing to consider, if you're going to shade those plants, and no surprise here, you're going to force some bushiness and striping. So be prepared for that. So yield perspective. One of our goals was to measure amount of sun scald. Did we reduce sun scald significantly by using a 50% shade cloth versus a no shade cloth? Yes. But sun scald percentages, whether it was from a no shade tunnel, a 30 or a 50% shade tunnel, only ranged from 1.2 to 2.9% of the entire yield. So even in the no shade tunnel, you had less than 3% loss from sun scald. And I just want to share that we didn't find any differences in sun scald damage among any of those 7 cultivars. So that's something to consider, is all of these, you know, the way they were grown in the high tunnel, they did really, really well. So yes, we did reduce sun scald incidence, but we only reduced it from 2.9 to 1.2%. So a pretty small margin. We saw kind of trends all over the board in terms of blossom end rot, which was another factor that we looked at, thinking about the effects of shading potentially on soil moisture and uptake by the pepper plants. And there was kind of overall the lowest level of blossom end rot in the 50% shade tunnels. But again, the numbers were kind of all over the board. So there wasn't really one clear trend in terms of blossom end rot. But the thing that folks might be most interested in will be that marketable yield and how many peppers we can put in that CSA box and take to the farmer's market. And what we found, looking at the data that was actually pooled over 2 years because of how the trends worked out, we were able to get approximately 7.5 marketable peppers per plant in the no-shade high tunnels versus approximately 5 fruit per plant in the 50% shade tunnels. So we did see a significant yield reduction. For folks who are listening to this, again, these are large colored bell peppers. We were very picky in our marketable versus non-marketable. So that might be one reason that our marketable yield per plant is lower than perhaps what you have on your farm. I will say that these plants were planted quite close together. We had double stagger rows with a foot between rows and between plants, I believe. So things were pretty tight because we were trying to get 7 different varieties of peppers into each of these high tunnels and ask the questions. So had our plant spacing been a little bit further apart, our yield might have been impacted as well. So I want to add that as a caveat. But again, this per plant basis, these are some numbers that you can, you know, kind of take home and run for yourself. So statistically, there was no difference between our no shade treatment and our 30% shade. But our 30% shade, the average number of fruit per plant was 5.9. So again, you know, something to consider when you're doing the math on shade cloth. I will share from a production standpoint, based on those colored bell peppers, Tequila yielded head and shoulders above the rest of the peppers, but they also had smaller and more fruit per plant than any of the other peppers. And this is anecdotal, but Tequila was kind of the most blasé tasting. So you might want to consider that. That was feedback based on the undergrad and research team. And if you're looking for some other high producers for your high tunnel in terms of number per plant, you might consider Delirio, which again was the orange pepper, and Flavor Burst, which was the yellow. And all of the reds actually perform very similar. Again, the range of fruit per plant among the reds, yellows, and oranges overall was 4.8 to 6.4. So still a reasonable number, but something to consider if you're looking for what works well in a high funnel. So key takeaways from our research at Iowa State, and just a note that this is published in Hort Science if you wanted to look it up. But you definitely don't want to exceed 30% when you're looking at shade cloth. And in hindsight, we should have redesigned this study to look at 10 and 20. But I think the data from our study shows that, yes, we reduce losses from sun scald, but it might not be as big of a deal for you as you think. A lot of prior research on shading of pepper specifically was looking at other parts of the United States where they potentially have more sunny days. And it was also looking at shading of open field crops versus crops within high tunnels. So that is something to consider. Now, I do recognize that having a cooler work environment for you and your employees is important. So some things that I would urge you to consider is, especially if you're doing a new build of a high tunnel, can you adjust the height of your sidewalls and how much ventilation you're getting through there? Do you currently have gable ventilation in place? If not, I would really encourage you to add that. And that can be a passive system where, you know, you're just opening it with levers. There's gable ventilation that has kind of a beeswax cartridge. When it gets hot enough, those louvers open and you have that natural ventilation. And then as that cools down, it pulls back shut. If you're someone who already loves automating your high tunnel, you could certainly add automated gable vents. I have seen examples from growers and specifically extension specialists who have been on farms who have seen growers add roof ventilation, especially in the peak of a Gothic high tunnel. So those might be things to consider, especially with these fruiting crops, because peppers and tomatoes in the Solanaceous family are this double whammy of if they get too hot, you get poor pollination or you get aborted fruit, but they are very, very sensitive to light levels to get to that fruit production. So we need that high light environment with those moderated temperatures. And I realize we're trying to ask for too much of a good thing when we're working in a high tunnel. Some other things that you might want to consider is how you're orienting your high tunnel and, you know, where your prevailing winds are, especially if you have solid end walls or you're keeping your end wall doors closed a lot. Making sure that that wind is going through those sidewalls and really, you know, drawing air through that high tunnel. We spent a lot of time thinking about this for my build in South Dakota. Again, a caveat of our research is we didn't look at the lighter shade cloth amount. So if you're doing this, I would consider a 20. I'd feel somewhat comfortable doing that. But again, realize you're not going to get as much temperature reduction as well. Another thing to consider would be pulling that shade cloth off earlier in the season to let more light in. Now, there have been some questions about what about alternative colors? So what should we use instead of black? There are pearl shade cloths and yellow shade cloths and red shade cloths. And a lot of this research has actually happened outside of the United States. But there was some research in 2015 that looked at production of green peppers, and they were looking in high tunnels, and it was the production under photoselective pearl nets. And that was what they found they recommended the most was those photoselective nets. And it's important to note from a worker standpoint that the temperature actually was not lowest under those nets, but the yield was the best. And yield was actually the lowest under the black shade cloth. So that's something to consider if you would like to invest more money into shade cloths. There has been some ongoing research looking at lettuce and tomatoes specifically under shade cloths, and they're finding similar results to us at Iowa State that even when we're reducing temperatures and maybe improving some metrics, we're still reducing yield. And in the case of lettuce, where they were shading high tunnels for lettuce production, they were actually changing the nutrient and mineral makeup of that lettuce in a negative way. So light is important for activities that relate to how vitamins are synthesized within a plant. So we want to think about that as well. Now, Carol, I'm curious, I'm going to maybe take a breath and pitch it back to you. Are you seeing folks use shade paint on high tunnels in Nebraska?
I have not.
Okay. And the reason I ask is I have had a few producers in South Dakota. I didn't see this in Iowa either, but I've had a few producers in South Dakota that are starting to do this. And they're kind of taking a play from, you know, the greenhouse industry, where they're putting shade paint on their greenhouses, you know, during the retail season to keep the plants happy and keep the customers happy, especially. Mm-hmm. And I really could not find good research on shade paint. I know it definitely exists. And the idea is that you mix so much water per the chemical to get different shading densities. And you typically need some sort of kind of an air sprayer system to apply it. But it's an area that I would like to explore more. So I can't really speak to this is a great or terrible idea because I haven't tried it yet or researched it. But it is something that I have heard of people trying.
Yeah, that's the first I've heard of anybody talking about that. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Something else that I don't have research on, but I have some anecdotal feedback from my colleagues in South Dakota, is instead of using a single or double poly, like a 6 mil high tunnel cover, they are going toward the woven covers that are typically 9 mil or more in density. And these honestly look like the covers that you might see on like a carport.
Okay.
Yeah. And honestly, the motivation for that from my colleagues who work in tribal local foods on the western side of the state, that's really been it's a tougher piece of material that can withstand the wind more. But a lot of those covers have about a 13 or more percent light reduction inherently and are already just, I kind of noticed, like compared to walking into a traditional high tunnel, felt cooler. Now, one thing that I've been concerned about is some of our growers are putting shade cloth on top of that woven material, and I think we're going to be reducing light levels too much again, depending on what you want to grow. But that is something that I have seen and would love to have lots of little high tunnels to compare materials for production.
So out of curiosity, because I know this is one thing producers are going to ask, how much does it cost to do these shade covers on the 20 by 40? We'll just start there because I know that's what you've worked with.
Yep. The 20 by 40, and now this is digging back in my memory bank, and this was pre-supply chain upheavals and inflation. So I want to say for our smaller high tunnels, we were looking at $400 to $500 a piece. For a larger, you know, a standard 96 by 30 high tunnel to get all the way up and over, you're probably looking at $600 to $1,000.
So that's a significant investment.
Yes. So it is a significant investment. And we've had growers, when Ajay and I started presenting this work in Iowa, we had growers who came back and, you know, said, we listened to your talk and we were thinking about buying a shade cloth and we didn't. And we're going to take some of the heat impacts or change some other things about ventilation, but we're not going to add a shade cloth to our system. And the other thing is, and I know it's tricky because it's hard when there's so much to do on the farm, but I know like our team was always tried to be really diligent of the high tunnel was the first thing in the day, you know, start there from a worker safety standpoint and, you know, and then move to other places on the farm. And I think I've seen some predictions from our state climatologist here in South Dakota, looking kind of at the Midwestern states. And again, I don't remember what it said about Nebraska, But I know in South Dakota, we're looking at an above average July through September forecast in terms of temperatures. So we're going to be doing a lot more of our high tunnel work early in the morning. And I've been spending some time with my farm research team talking about, you know, drinking lots of water and staying safe. Another thing that I have seen in high tunnels and don't have data on, but has worked, again, anecdotally for some of the farmers here in South Dakota, is they're using caterpillar tunnels, which, as we know with caterpillar tunnels, it's hard to open those really wide up and get a lot of ventilation in them. So they can kind of be a little bit more of a heat sink. But they actually installed wobblers, so little wobbler sprinklers that they use above their lettuce as a cooling mechanism. Now, with anything with overhead misting or irrigation, you'd want to think very critically about food safety and disease ramifications. So again, not something that I've researched yet, but Carol, if you have any comments on that, I'd actually love to turn it back to you.
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Okay.
That's also a new one for me.
Yeah. So I feel like maybe we're just raising more questions than answers for your listeners. But again, some things to consider. If you're going to trial anything on farm, don't maybe bet the whole tie tunnel or the whole crop on it just because you heard Christine Lang share it in a podcast. But definitely some things to consider. So I really do want to stress for solanaceous crops, especially where we're growing them in the height of summer. You know, if you're looking at modifying or doing a new high tunnel build, consider those end walls. Consider adding that gable ventilation or additional ventilation. I know some folks might be using fans and forced air ventilating, and we have a lot that we can learn from our greenhouse counterparts about how to do that. But I also realize the minute we start adding too many bells and whistles to our high tunnel, we might not be high tunnel producers anymore. We might be getting into the world of greenhouse growing, and your electricity / equipment budget might not allow for that. And I completely understand. So I tend to stop at roll-up slides, sides, and gable ventilation.
Which is what most producers would have in general.
Yes, definitely. Now, I do want to kind of end our discussion of heat in high tunnels. I've talked a few times about roll-up sides, and they are awesome. And if you can do, whether it's a solar or a battery, or you are close enough that you can hook up to electricity to automate those roll-up sides, I really encourage folks to do that. I think that's a worthwhile investment. There's a lot of stress to when it comes to running out to and from high tunnels. And do I roll the sides up? Do I roll the sides down? Or it was cool and cloudy in the morning and I left for the market, or I left to, in my case as a graduate student, I left to go take a class and then things go sideways. Our pepper tunnels did not have automated sides. So I'll be the first to admit that they were up most of the time, just from a heat management, we're not going to cook the high tunnel standpoint. Mm-hmm. But I've heard and experienced more damage from overheating a high tunnel and cooking a crop than I have from freezing out a crop at the wrong time of year. So I will just share our personal experiences with this. We had planted a grafted tomato study. We had ironically had to put frost blankets over everything because it was potentially going to get below freezing, but we really needed to get things into the field on that particular day. We know how that goes. Mm-hmm. Things were fine, removed all the frost blanket. And a week later, about a week, week and a half later, I went to check the crop on the weekend at our research farm, and it was 60 degrees out, full sun, and the high tunnel was closed and eerily quiet. And I went, oh no. And I opened that door and it was just a rush of heat. So temperatures were over 150 degrees based on our air temperature sensors because it was a fully closed high tunnel. And the reason those roll-up sides failed is mice had built a nest in the electrical box and it had finally shorted out, so those sides didn't roll up. So if you're going to automate these heat mitigation strategies, make sure you have an alarm system. There are some great systems that tie to Wi-Fi if you're close enough to your farm. There are cell-enabled systems that you can utilize as well. Of course, there are definitely costs with any of those systems as well. And I'm looking at pricing some things out for my own high tunnels on campus right now and waiting for some quotes. But just something to bear in mind, you know, if you're looking to alleviate that stress of having a high tunnel that opens and closes as a heat management tool, try to have some sort of an alarm or fail safe, because we lost most of that tomato research crop and essentially had to start the project over.
And that happens probably more than people know.
Yes, it certainly does. And I will throw out that if you're looking at a roll-up side motorized package, not including electricity for a high tunnel, but you're probably looking at $2,000 to $3,000 per high tunnel to have those motorized sides. But I do know some producers that one side they roll up and down, and then the other one they roll up themselves, just depending on, you know, storms or prevailing winds. So I've seen things like that. I've looked up some pricing on automating gable ventilation. Some of the passive open units to get those gables in each end wall are about $300 versus to fully automate would be about $1,200 per gable. So, you know, there are definitely costs with all of these fail safes. So in your case, maybe shade cloth, not exceeding 30% still might make financial sense. And I can totally respect that.
Yeah.
Another unintended consequence, maybe I'll end in it, one more pro of shade cloth. One unintended consequence is you have one more thing, especially if you're doing single poly high tunnels, you have one more thing over that plastic holding it down. And I don't have any research on this, but there's got to be some hail protection there, I think.
you would think so. All right. Well, Christine, thank you so much for joining me this week.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure to talk about heat, especially as we head into the summer.
I know. And it's been an unseasonably warm spring so far. So hopefully that doesn't indicate the kind of summer we're going to have, although I'm afraid it might.
I think it just might. So drink lots of water. Stay safe. Work in those high tunnels early if you can. I know it's easier said than done, depending on if you're an early bird or not.
All right. Well, thank you, Christine. And thank you to everyone who listened today. Please be sure to like and subscribe to Nebraska Grows wherever you get your favorite podcasts.